From the campus of Maharshi University of Management, you are listening to World Radio KHOE 90.5 FM and to the program What's New on Campus. And joining us today by telephone is Raja Harris Kaplan, Raja of Invincible India, of the Global Country of World Peace. And with us in the studio is Bob Markowitz, Executive Regional Director and Certified Teacher of the Transcendental Meditation Program here in Fairfield. Welcome, Roger Harris and Bob Markowitz.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you, Stan.
It's an honor to talk with you, Roger Harris. Many in the greater Fairfield area know you as a successful business and family man and as a teacher of transcendental meditation. You have had the unique opportunity to have worked closely with Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of the Transcendental Meditation Movement, as well as the founder of Maharshi University of Management and the Maharshi School for the students kindergarten through the 12th grade. These Fairfield schools have gained international acclaim for academic excellence, whose students year after year win many awards in virtually every aspect of education. And graduates of these schools are often sought after by businesses and corporations for employment because of their high academic achievements. So, everyone here in the Fairfield Maharshi Vedic City area, farmers, shopkeepers, teachers, students, homekeepers, are familiar with Maharshi, with the university and with the school, but not everyone is familiar with the origins of the Transcendental Meditation Movement and the Vedic pundits who are living and performing in Maharshi Vedic City, keeping lively the laws of nature and contributing to the success, harmony, and coherence and creativity of us all. So we hope that this interview will add some light to the subject, and perhaps we can begin by asking you, Raja Harris, what about your title, Raja of India of the Global Country of World Peace, what it means and the responsibilities that go along with it.
Thank you again for inviting me, Stan. I really appreciate it. It's always great to be connected to Fairfield, where we live for such a long time, and we have so many dear friends there, and really fantastic memories. Thank you. It's such an interesting name when you think about it, Global Country of World Peace. It has two times big in it, global and world. My own feeling in Maharshi picking this name was he was giving his view of the purpose of what his teaching was, and in that I also see my role as a Raja. Because the value of global, the value of world in this example is one of unity. And real unity isn't on the level of an idea, but it's on the level of an experience, an individual's experience of harmonized diversity, fully lively diversity, fully lively harmony. I guess another way of saying this is it's the full awareness on the individual level of their own silent basis of their life, quiet, peaceful, inner fulfillment. At the same time, the full potentiality of dynamism, silence and dynamism flowing together. And in terms of a global country of world peace, it means nations fully harmonized within themselves, yet diversified within themselves, flowering, and the exact same value together between all nations of the world. That's to me what global country of world peace means. And you asked what my view is of my role as Raja. A Raja of the Global Country of World Peace is an administrator. That's what a Raja means, though the Raja name sounds more glorious than administrator. And so I take it in my own case as the Raja's role is someone to promote that peace, that harmony and success for every individual in the nation for which they're responsible and for the nation as a whole, and the relationship of their nation with other countries. It's a huge role, you could say, on one hand, but it has to be accomplished, if it's really going to be accomplished, from a very quiet, still basis of life. So that's how I see the role of Raja of the Global Country of World Peace and the Global Country of World Peace's mandate.
Very good. That's quite a role. That's quite a job you have, I must say. Roger Harris, please tell those of us who are not familiar about the Vedic tradition of teachers that Maharshi comes from, and how is it different from Hinduism?
It's such a beautiful question. The most remarkable thing, I think, that I've experienced in my own life, and I'm sure Bob feels the same, and many people, is that we had a chance to actually interact with a fully enlightened master of the Vedic tradition, Maharshi Mahesh Yogi. And it's clearer to us all now, after all these years, that when Maharshi came out from India to go around the world and bring with him this knowledge of Ved, which is Ved means knowledge, total knowledge, the total knowledge and organizing power of total natural law. And that value uplifts and supports every religion, of which, of course, Hinduism is one, but only one such religion. But through the long, long corridor of time and the cycles of time, there have been enlightened masters of this Vedic tradition who took on the role, not just themselves, of enjoying that quiet, peaceful, blissful, powerful life of enlightenment, but have taken on the role of teachers. And I think the most remarkable thing about Maharshi is that to his probably great personal discomfort, physically traveling around the world in planes in those days, and I can't even imagine, you know, traveling on planes in the 50s with cigar smoking and all that, and going to these countries and staying in unusual places and so on. He wanted to, and I would say with the blessings of his Vedic tradition, felt the responsibility to give that birthright of everybody, which is their own individual potentiality for enlightenment, to give the experience of that to everybody, regardless of their religion, regardless of their culture, or I would say, maybe better put, to uplift their own religion, to uplift their own culture. That tradition, Maharshi comes as a direct descendant of that tradition of masters, and it's a tradition of that experience of the total potential of natural law, lively in oneself, as an all-time reality. So we appreciate Hinduism, we appreciate Buddhism, we appreciate, of course, Christianity and all the great religions of the world. But the profound nature of this knowledge is in its underlying source and nourishment for all those religions and all those cultures.
Now, is it true that the Vedic tradition actually precedes religion? Is that your understanding too? It goes back further than any other religion does.
Yeah, it precedes any idea we have of religion. When the Vedic tradition, the Vedic understanding of the cycles of time is such a profound appreciation for the nature of life. I mean, it would be worth some time just going into that. And those of your audience who've ever had a chance to read Maharshi's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, there's an incredible description just about the point you're asking about, the cycles of time and the role of Ved. But Ved, as Maharshi understands it, not as kind of a simplistic view, but at its most profound level, is the structuring intelligence of total natural law. It's like, you know, when you open up a spreadsheet of Excel, for example, and you put in a formula, all the intelligence is there to take that formula and lift it up and then create something out of that. There's a structuring intelligence which underlines the apparent blankness of a spreadsheet, just to use one concept. Ved, one way of understanding it, is that blueprint of creation, like a blueprint of a house, or the structuring intelligence behind a spreadsheet, which seems to be blank, but actually contains within it the potentiality for all the myriad colors in a spreadsheet, or charts in a spreadsheet, or numbers in a spreadsheet, whatever it could be. All those things that pop up from there have their origin in that intelligence. So that intelligence is something which precedes specificity of religion, both in terms of time, it predates it, and in terms of being its actual underlying basis. I hope that was clear. I'm not sure if it was, but I was trying to give a sense of the depth of the fundamental basis of Ved and Vedic knowledge.
I even believe, Roger Harris, that UNESCO has delineated this oral tradition that's been passed on since time began from teacher to student as a world heritage, and acknowledges that the Ved is the oldest body of knowledge known to man.
Yeah, it recognizes that oral tradition as a precious heritage of the world, absolutely, which of course it is.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful description. Now, Roger Harris, what was the thinking when Maharshi founded the Global Country of World Peace and the establishment of Rajas to administer it? There must have been some great need that Maharshi thought needed to be taken care of.
I never had a chance to ask Maharshi that question directly. I'll tell you my impression, and if Bob has any thoughts, he might have some others. I think based on the experience of so many people around the world having the clear experience of transcending, Maharshi felt the time had come to now take that level of possibility of the world to a higher level, means to take the individual experiences of growth of consciousness and make it more general for the benefit of the whole world. I want to go back and just take another minute to explain what I mean, please. It's not possible to, when you think back at what Maharshi's task was, when he came out and talked about the word transcendental meditation, people in that time had no idea of what was meditation. There were some kind of contemplative religious meditations, but the whole thing was such a mishmash. But worse than that was, what did it mean to transcend? I mean, I don't know if Bob remembers, but I can remember people asking in the early 70s about transcendental meditation. The word itself was really a puzzle for many people. And you can imagine Maharshi coming out into the world and saying he wanted to give this experience of the self, or Atma in the Vedic language. And there wasn't even really a frame of reference in the West for people to understand it. The experience of higher states of consciousness, or the experience of inner bliss, was really thought to be a miraculous kind of one-off experience, occasionally experienced by a few remote Catholic saints or other people who may have had one flash of experience. Or, for example, in one tradition, in the Jewish tradition, one writer, Martin Buber, had one experience of unity consciousness for a few seconds and spent the rest of his life writing books about it, saying that no one was ever going to have that experience. He was doomed to not have that experience again, which he called I-Thou, which is just really an experience of unity consciousness. Into that, Maharshi came and he brought the experience of transcending. And now, when we say to people, transcending in the community in Fairfield, they say, yeah, I understand transcending. I not only understand it, I experience it. I not only experience it, but I have the experience of sitting in that underlying, what we were just describing, that unified field of all the laws of nature, and feeling that incredible deep peace as a concrete reality, and yet seeing within that its own inherent latent dynamism. The ability to say that, and even more experience it, is something that's absolutely unique to our time, in our recorded history, that so many people could have that experience. Could sit, for example, in the Golden Dome and have that experience. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It was unthinkable. But Maharshi's purpose was never just that. His patience, in retrospect, was unbelievable, because he knew he had to create enough of a level of a softness in collective consciousness by having enough people having that experience. But then on that basis, what he said was, his idea was then to create groups. And the groups would then, through the lighthouses, little group here, little group there, practicing these technologies of consciousness together, would be enough individual lights here and there to create a big light for the whole world. And when he felt that that time had come, it was at that time that he established the global country of world peace, because he saw then that the time was ready to go beyond the level of individual experience, growth of experience, to really creating what he called, in a word, invincibility for every nation. It's a huge word, invincibility, that nobody could overcome you, that nothing could defeat you, that total potentiality at any moment is lively and available to you. That's the concept of the global country of world peace. And the idea is, and the practicality, as you see it in Fairfield, is to have, which is the leading one of such groups around the world, is to be that lighthouse, in this case for America, and to really create everybody's destiny, which is to live in a global country of world peace. And Arlene, my wife is here with me, and she wanted to make a comment as well, if that's okay.
Please do.
This is not to be recorded, though. One beautiful experience, because you asked about why the Rajas in the world country of world peace, and that was this past Guru Purnima, Raja Ram invited all the national directors to come and give their reports of teaching in their countries. And it was incredibly heartwarming, and you just saw the brilliance of Marshi's plan, was they got up and, you know, put tiny little places in all these, you know, places no one has ever gone to anywhere in the world. All of a sudden had a Raja who was administering the teachers in that area, and people were learning TM. And it's just been incredibly inspiring. So I think if Marshi hadn't done that, that maybe TM wouldn't be as lively all over the world. Hmm. But now we have Rajas who are responsible, most of them, for 8 countries, and many of them travel all over the world and meeting all these people, and they're so devoted, these Rajas. They're working very, very hard and very attentive, and it's just Marsha's brilliance, you know, in this plan.
Thank you so much, Charlene. That was beautiful.
You said it beautifully.
Okay,
it was very, very sweet. Very well said.
Yes.
I think one of the most incredible practical aspects that's happened with this program of Rajas that you were asking about is to see how, with great fervor and with great love, all the Rajas have picked up the challenge to bring this knowledge of total natural law to all the countries of the world. And it was amazing, just recently there was a World Assembly held here in Meru, Holland. And at that time, there was a chance for all the different leaders of the countries to come forward and explain what they'd been doing. And it was incredibly heartening, absolutely thrilling, to hear in for example, in Latin America, country after country, where the military is learning to meditate, where the heads of the country have learned to meditate and asked to do the cities, where universities want all their students to start, where one country has asked for a program for 1 million people to learn meditation. Now that's come about because of this brilliant system of administration that Maharshi created, with his Rajas really looking deeply, whether it's in Ecuador or whether it's Mongolia, or whether it's South Korea, or whether it's the Philippines. What we see is this global march of this experience. And I really think that the system of Rajas was very brilliant. One more point I would mention about this, you might enjoy this point, it's something that Dr. Neil Patterson, who's been a great champion of the TM program around the world for decades, he was relating this story. He said that he went to an Indian community in British Columbia to explain a program that we're going to talk about, I think, in a few minutes, which is the Vedic Pundits. And he explained to them what we were doing, and this person who didn't, he had learned to meditate and was enjoying their meditation, but really had no background in the organization. He asked Neil about it. Neil started to explain about Rajas. And the person interrupted him, and he said, I understand why Maharshi made Rajas. And Yoga said, really, why? He said, because in ancient Vedic times, when you read about the role of the Raja, the Raja's role was to create coherence in society and to maintain groups for that purpose, and specifically Vedic pundits. And because no one else in the world picked up that charge, no one else came forward. All the governments of the world, which we've appealed to do this themselves, they could do it. They have the resources to do it easily, to create those groups that can create the coherence in their countries. That Maharshi said, we'll do it ourselves. And we'll do it in that traditional way. We'll appoint a Raja. And the Raja will take on the role of making sure that there are those groups for their countries. And in general, all the Rajas together will ensure that we have large groups of Vedic pundits to ensure the invincibility and peace of the whole world.
Beautiful. Beautifully said, Roger Harris. Speaking of the pundits, that was another point we want to cover here, is what part do the Vedic pundits play in bringing permanent world peace to the family of man?
A Vedic pundit means a certain group of individuals who, throughout recorded time, have as their, the word in they use in their tradition is dharma, which means their life routine or their obligation or their duty or their good fortune, all those things together, dharma, to perform for society the role of being peacekeepers. They're called Vedic pundits. And they have within their tradition a dual role. They practice yoga and yajna. Yoga, as it's commonly known in the West, has come to mean exercises, flopping around this way and that. But yoga means union. And what it really means in yoga, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, it means the integrated experience of integrated life, yoga. It means, in a simple word, meditation. And the experience in oneself of one's unified nature, holistic nature. That practice is common to everybody in the world, and everybody could meditate. And groups of people doing the TM program, and then its advanced programs, TM City program, and this wonderful program of yogic flying, all those together produces a very powerful effect. Wherever that group is, whoever those people are. But there's a speciality of Maharshi's Vedic pundits. And what they do is they have also these ancient technologies of what's called yajna. Y-A-G-Y-A, yajna. And yajna are those specific performances performed from very quiet level of consciousness that have as their effect the enlivenment of that most fundamental level of life. And so, tucked away in different parts of India for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, there have been small groups of these pundits performing different yajnas. Could be for individual benefits or society benefits. But over time, the power of that group performance, of its real importance, which was for the benefit of all society, has become lost. And of course, the influence of foreign people in India, unfortunately, took the deliberate tact of trying to destroy that, or minimalize it, or put it into disrepute. And incredibly, Maharshi systematically has revived that tradition of yajna. It'll be, in the hundreds of years to come, one of the things that people will look back on with most awe, I think, of what Maharshi did. He revived both in its completeness and purity the tradition of yajna, and also created the first groups of people, groups of Vedic pundits together in enough size to have the power and influence for the whole world. The first such time that Maharshi was able to assemble a group of Vedic pundits in size was late 87, 88, in he arranged the first group of 8,000, which is the number that was needed then for the whole world. And you may remember it was an unbelievable time for the world. The Berlin Wall fell. No one knew why. As a matter of fact, it was a mistake. It wasn't that anyone intended for it to happen or could have predicted that the Berlin Wall would fall in such a peaceful way, and the fall of the whole Soviet bloc in that way. It was completely unbelievable. It exactly corresponded with that. Actually, there's a great quote of Ronald Reagan. When they asked him why he was, just at that time, he went to Moscow, and they asked him, he had recently, before that, called the Soviet Union the evil empire. And he said, but how could you say that? How could you have said that, and here you are coming to make peace? He said, I don't know, but it seems to me it was another time, another era. In every continent of the world, at that particular time, scores of wars ended. We were able to keep that group together for about 2 years, and then the funding of it, which came from a wonderful family in Fairfield, the Zimmerman family, great, great family, had to end. And so what I spend my time on now, and my wife Arlene and I spend time together with Bob Markowitz and so many wonderful people, is recreating that large group enough for the whole world. That's the most exciting thing that we're doing, so that we can create in one place, at the very center point of India, what's called the Brahmastan of India, create there one group, a large group of about 10,000 Maharshi Vedic pundits, who every day through their practice of yoga, deep meditation that they do every day, and yajna, these very specific performances, that they can be that peace force, that harmonizing force, that influence of global prosperity enough for the whole world. It's the most exciting, absolutely thrilling project to work on. And this year, we've created a guest facility there for courses so that people can come to the Brahmastan and see it for themselves. I'll just say another sentence in case I didn't know if you had any points or questions you wanted to raise, but just one last thing about this. It's such an abstraction to say to somebody, now we have Vedic pundits who doing nothing, means meditating, experiencing pure nothingness, absolute peace and silence, lively, powerful, unbounded nothingness, and then doing these group practices of yajna, that they can shake the world. So it's an incredibly abstract thing to say on the one hand. But on the other hand, it's so intensely powerful and palpable. And many of your people listening to this who have been able to hear the Maharshi Vedic pundits in Maharshi Vedic City in Fairfield, where you are, know what it's like. Actually, to listen to those Vedic yajnas, those performances, one can see how powerful they are and really experience that. So to see that in its biggest group, we have about 2,500 pundits now at the Brahmastan of India, and we're trying to grow that group to be about 3,000 by the end of this year, and then get up to 8,000 and then 10,000. So to experience that and have the joy of being there, what we're doing is we're arranging beautiful course facilities, and we're having the first people come this coming the end of September and the beginning of October. So we're hoping that people can really enjoy that and have, I would say without overstating it, have the bliss of experiencing this peace-creating group for the whole world.
That's beautiful. Is there some place where people can go to fill applications to use this facility, to go in this fall?
There is. And Bob Markowitz, do you remember
it's Maharishi. Yes, there's a website, MaharishiIndiaCourses.com. And if they go to that website, they'll find a lot of information on just about everything. There are questions and pictures of how beautiful the facility is and where it is in India, questions and answers on how to get there and when there are rooms available. There are information on if you want to spend some time traveling around India while you're there and how we can assist you with that, and then special themes and courses that will be taking place over the year. So everything you need to know is right there on that website, and any questions you have, you can ask there, and one of us will be very happy to get back to you with an answer.
The MaharshiIndiaCourses.com.
Yes.
Great.
And I understand the facilities are new and up to Western standards, is that right?
They are. They're it's been so much fun these last few days ordering the last pieces. Of course, the generators, backup generators are there, the high-speed internet is there, telephone system is there, but we ordered the rugs yesterday and the new towels that are coming, the special dishes, everything. It's really, I think, going to be very nice. It's a challenge, you know, to build something. This is the center, it's the center point of India, and it's exactly, it's incredible because there was just forest there. Absolutely nothing was there. And so in that, no roads, you know, no utilities, no water, nothing. In that environment, was created this campus for pundits, and now also we've created this facilities for guests. But yeah, it's all there. It's up to Western standards. And Stan, I hope you come and visit it and see what you think.
I definitely am intending to.
Actually, just to let people share the delight of it, everyone who comes will actually have a suite, a two-room suite with, again, high-speed internet, and you can use Skype and phone lines from there. All the food and everything is up to Western standards. So you'll be in the midst of India in a very rural and beautiful setting, yet complete Western-style comfort. So it should allow you to just completely enjoy the program. And what will be happening there is you'll be in the situation where you can enjoy every day doing your long meditations and TM programs. And there'll be wonderful tapes of Maharishi as well that you can listen to. And every day the Vedic pundits will come and visit you, so you don't have to travel anywhere. They will come and you'll be able to listen in on those Vedic performances that Roger Harris was speaking about and enjoy them for yourself without having to travel any place or go any place to do so. And at the same time, we are arranging special themes for different courses so that people might be able to enjoy the whole situation better. And coming up in November, from November 13th to November 20th, Dr. Vernon Katz, who most of you know, worked with Maharishi on many of his translations and much of the work that he did, and was very, very close with Maharishi for all those years, will be speaking to the group for a whole week. He'll be relaying his experiences of working with Maharishi and some of the insights that Maharishi had. He'll be talking about all the things that Maharishi and he worked on together and just how it was being with Maharishi. He's going to be taping some of those meetings that we'll have and then also calling in by Skype and answering our own questions. So there'll be chances for questions and answers with him. And we think it'd be a fabulous opportunity to just be there and enjoy and get a chance to spend a week with Vernon. So for many people, that I think will be quite enjoyable. And also along with that, since it is quite a ways to go to India, and one doesn't do it, you know, that often, for those people who would like, there'll be a chance to tour around India and see some of the Taj Mahal and the Ganges River and the mountains in the south and all the beautiful places that we've heard about or had a chance to read about. And this will give us a chance under supervision and as the guest of the TM movement to really get a chance to enjoy all the sweetness of India as well.
Very good. I guess the weather is pretty good this time of year.
It's fabulous. The courses are designed to be from October, which the rainy season finishes right around now. So it's quite nice. Still warm, but not too warm. And then the courses will end in March. The hottest months in India are April and May. And then it's too hot to have people come. So we'll end in March. But we'll go kind of over the winter. So when people are feeling that day, they wake up in Fairfield in November and think winter's coming. Boy, I wouldn't mind getting away for a little while. Come to India and experience the Vedic pundits.
Well, this sounds marvelous. I certainly am planning on going myself, and I encourage everyone in our listening audience who can do so to do that, because this is a very unique opportunity to see what the latest developments are in the movement and to experience the pundits. How many pundits are there at the Brahmastan now, Roger Harris?
There's about 1,500 there right now.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's quite great.
That's very good.
Okay, it was really, Stan, it was fun talking to you. It was really, really nice. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Thank you, Roger Harris, and it's been a pleasure talking with you. Bob, maybe you can tell us again the email address, the contact.
Yes. It's MaharishiIndiaCourses.com, and if you have any questions, hopefully they'll be answered there, or there'll be a chance for you to send us an email if you have any particular questions that you like. And again, those dates that Vernon Katz will be there will be November 13th to the 20th, but there are, plenty of times available still in October, and we look forward to everyone coming and enjoying.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you, Roger Harris, for bringing us up to date on Transcendental Meditation and the Transcendental Meditation programs, and a little history of Maharishi and the worldwide movement, which so many millions of people benefit from every day. We are so fortunate that Maharishi provides us with a link and roadmap to life free from suffering, but bountiful, creative, and blissful life, the link being the tradition of Vedic knowledge. His roadmap includes guides along the way, such as the Rajas and ministers of his global country of world peace, to ensure quick and safe passage to the goal of heaven on earth. As Maharishi used to say, every journey begins with a first step, and it is the teachers of transcendental meditation that Maharishi has taught the first step to, so that the teachers can pass it on to everyone else. The first step is not only the most incredible, it is the easiest and most simple as well, containing within it both the beginning and the end of the journey. Thanks again to our dear Roger Harris in India, and to Bob Markowitz for your tireless, joyful work to bring us all Raj Ram, heaven on earth. And Bob, is there some place people can contact if they want to begin the Transcendental Meditation?
Yes, there's a very nice website called tm.org that can put you in touch with your local center. It has lots of explanations and even an introductory lecture by Roger Hagelin that you can listen to or share with your friends. We have another website about doctors on tm.org that can answer any medical questions. And there's just a lot of information that's easy to deal with. And of course, for those in the Fairfield area, they can call the local TM Center at 641-472-1174. Or if you go online again and put your email address in, they will put you in contact with the TM teacher closest to you.
Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you,
asking.
Bob. And in the tradition of Maharishi ending a talk on pure knowledge, Vedic knowledge, we say Jai Gurudev.